This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, and this is episode 650 of the Late Round Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by FanDuel. Thanks for tuning in. Two things before I get to these mailbag questions. First, remember to sign up for FanDuel Fantasy. For users who have yet to make a deposit on FanDuel Fantasy, you can deposit today to receive two free entries. All you have to do is deposit a minimum of $10 in your FanDuel DFS account, and you'll be instantly rewarded with two free vouchers. Be sure to deposit now and play for free. Head over to FanDuel.com or download the FanDuel Fantasy app today. Eligibility restrictions apply. Go to FanDuel.com or download the FanDuel app for more details. The second thing I want to shout out is that the late round draft guide is done. It's out there. For anyone who pre-ordered, it's now in your email inbox. And for anyone who wants to dig in and read about 2022 draft strategy, players to target, avoid, and more, head to LateRound.com right now and purchase the guide for $24.99. It's a 165-page PDF that's updated weekly from now through August. So you'll get updated rankings, players to target, all that good stuff as things naturally change over the next couple of months. I can confidently say that it's the most comprehensive thing that I've put together as a fantasy football analyst. It's not really close. I put a lot of effort into this thing, and I hope that it shows. I hope that you really like it. So check it out today over on LateRound.com. The first question this week is from Patreon, and it's from Aaron. It says, I'm not sure how to value Hunter Renfrow. He has a teammate being selected early in drafts and target competition from a top tight end. However, Josh McDaniels finds a way to keep his slot wide receiver on the field 90% of the time. They are in a division where they will have to put up points, and their offense could be really good. His ADP is in the wide receiver 3 or 4 range, but it seems like he should be a locked-in wide receiver too. How do you value him in both redraft and dynasty? So when looking at the wide receiver landscape right now, it's really tough to make the argument that Hunter Renfrow should be a wide receiver too. Right now, we have no injuries. You'd be having to place him over some really, really solid breakout candidates and solid players to put him in the top 24. I'm lower than the market on Renfrow this season. And it's not because I don't like him as a player. It's hard to not love Hunter Renfrow. And I do think that he's someone who can at least meet expectation. If you're drafting for a floor or for safety, maybe because you've got a deep starting roster or something like that, Renfrow's fine. But you nailed it with this question. You have Devontae Adams there now, and Darren Waller's healthy. Last year, even with a banged up Waller and not a whole lot of competition outside of that, Renfrow had a target share per game rate of about 21%. That's fine. That's good, but it's definitely not great. What happens if Waller plays the whole season and sees the 24% share that he prorated to last year? What if Devontae Adams is in that 28% range that we see from elite wide receivers? All of a sudden, it's hard to see a super high target share ceiling for Hunter Renfrow. And the other problem with Renfrow is touchdowns. He's not a regression candidate or anything like that, but I do worry about his red zone usage with Adams now in the mix and Waller potentially healthy. Because only Cooper Kupp, Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams, and Chris Godwin had more red zone targets than Hunter Renfrow last year. That's why he's not a regression candidate. He scored a lot of touchdowns. He did good in the touchdown column because he was getting looks there. But it's unlikely he maintains that pace with Adams and Waller. Like I said, he's fine. Like, he's not someone who's likely going to burn you. I just am a little bit concerned about where the ceiling is coming from, that's all. And maybe this new offense will feature him more than expected. It's just that if you have high expectations for Adams and Waller, it's tough to think Renfrow's going to finish as like a top 15 guy. Unless the entire offense really, really exceeds expectation. The next question is also from Patreon. It's from Miles. It says, is vacated targets a real thing? How should we value pass catchers in an offense when a top pass catcher leaves their team? There are people out there who love to battle against the idea of vacated targets. And then there are people out there who love to talk about vacated targets. I'm somewhere in the middle. It's not because I think vacated targets are something super worthwhile. When we look at vacated targets, we're looking at an offense that played a season ago. Offenses change. Like, if you look at Tampa Bay's vacated targets, that's an offense that threw the ball 731 times last year. They're not going to throw it as much this season. So if you're working strictly off of vacated targets, you're bound to overinflate the numbers in your analysis. If you're using vacated targets as like a quick reference, whatever. I don't understand why that would matter so much. Because you're really just saying, hey, look, a lot of players left this team this past year. I do think, though, that people need to start thinking in terms of target share. Vacated target share is a much more realistic approach, since target share conforms to whatever the offense is doing. If the offense throws the ball less, the target share number doesn't change. It just impacts the target total that's formulated from target share. But the other point to make here is that singular players don't automatically fill some target share void. Devontae Adams leaves the Packers. He had a 30% target share last season. That 30% share doesn't just automatically go to Alan Lazard. Lazard doesn't just jump into that role. The reason Adams was seeing that work is because Devontae Adams is good. Targets are earned. You have to be a good player to get targeted at a high rate, because good players get open more often. And teams feed playmakers because they can do more with the ball in their hands. Does Adams being gone present an opportunity? Yes. But the player still has to be good. If you think Alan Lazard is good, then he has an opportunity to capture a larger target share in the Packers offense. If Christian Watson's good, then there's more of a target share ceiling without Adams. That's where I sort of disagree with the people who are super against vacated targets. If we shift vacated targets to vacated target share, which is sort of the same idea overall, we can use that idea to show potential opportunity. If you don't think that we can do that, then you think that teammate competition is absolutely irrelevant, which I disagree with wholeheartedly. Because think of it this way. If you have a team that's got Cooper Kupp, Ja'Marr Chase, Tyreek Hill, and Justin Jefferson, you can't assume all of those players are going to see their typical target shares that they normally see. That competition is insane. Some target share will go to running backs. Some will go to tight ends. They're not all going to see a 25%+ target share. That's not even possible. So that alone tells you that target share numbers can fluctuate based on team competition. It's just that using vacated targets, that's not the way to come up with that target projection, because volume is going to be different in offenses year over year, and players still need to be good to see those targets. They still need that talent. So instead of viewing it as this for sure thing, instead of saying this player is going to see a ton of targets this year because there are so many vacated targets, frame it in a way where it's about potential opportunity and talent. Say, this player is talented and there's opportunity in his offense to capture a large target share. Rashad Bateman is a great example of this. There's a lack of competition in that Ravens offense now with Marquise Brown gone. So there's a higher target share ceiling for Rashad Bateman, and he's also good. So he can grab hold of that and maybe get to a 30% share if he really hits. That's how I approach the vacated targets argument. Maybe it means I don't believe in vacated targets. I have no idea. But those are at least my thoughts on the topic. This next question is from @SuaveSwaverson on Twitter. It says, CD Lamb has a higher projected draft spot than much more proven wide receivers, Amari Cooper, Mike Evans, and Keenan Allen. Do you agree with his ranking, even though Lamb's production hasn't lived up to a top 10 wide receiver's expectations in his first two seasons? I think that he should definitely be going ahead of Amari Cooper. I don't think that one's really close at all, given Cooper's situation and recent production. And I have Lamb ahead of Keenan Allen as well. Allen's a safe pick, and I actually like him more than consensus in redraft. But he's 30 years old now, if you want to look at the negatives. And we know he's not this big touchdown and red zone threat. Mike Evans is someone I actually have in the same tier as CeeDee Lamb, though. So if you want to go the Mike Evans route over Lamb, I'm not against that at all. That's why I create tiers. If you're more risk-averse in the early rounds, then you can opt to go with a safer option in that part of the draft. And Evans is definitely safer with Gronk gone, AB gone, and Godwin looking very iffy over the first month or so of the season. The reason you're buying into Lamb is sort of what I just talked about with vacated targets. Amari Cooper is a good player, so Lamb had been battling for target share with another good wide receiver. If Lamb had been really good, he would have hit like a 25% target share, yes. And his per game numbers were only in that like 20% range. He had some struggles last year, there's no doubt. But the opportunity is there to get into that 25% target share range, if not more. And in an offense that's been pretty favorable for the pass, the argument is there pretty easily that Lamb could have a really big, like elite breakout season. It just depends on your risk tolerance, though. Evans, I have no issue drafting over Lamb. Keenan Allen, you're getting a little bit sketchier, but whatever, I get it. Amari Cooper is going a handful of rounds later, and for good reason. The next question is from @BobForest3. What am I missing with Dalton Schultz? Seems to me, of the top 5 or 6 tight ends, his situation is the only one that's improved, and he was top 5 last season. Love the show. Thanks. I think we have to remember to not lean in super heavily on situation alone. Are you going to rank Dalton Schultz over Waller, Pitts, Kelsey, Andrews? Probably not. At least the last three would be a tough sell. Maybe Waller. Are you going to rank him over Kittle? I mean, I can see a scenario where he outscores George Kittle. But just for a quick reference, Kittle scored 14 or more PPR points per game in each of his last four seasons. Dalton Schultz had 12.3 PPR points per game last year. This is where looking at season-ending finishes can really get you into trouble. Schultz finished with 10 more points than George Kittle last year. Yes, he technically ranked ahead of him. But he also played three more games. And I'm not like super pro Kittle or anything. I just think we're talking about two completely different types of players. Schultz is more of that like Zach Ertz, Greg Olsen type tight end who's going to get by on volume. And that volume should increase this year at least. But Kittle is an elite talent. And that shows more at a position where scoring touchdowns and having that efficiency is important because the position in total sees less volume. I just don't know how you rank Schultz over those players. I've got him over players like TJ Hockenson and Dallas Goedert, sure. You can draft him over them. But even though it's possible he finishes in the top three or so this year, I think players like Kittle or Waller, who are true game-breaking talents, they have better odds. This next question is from Patreon. It's from Robert. Let's talk Rams backfield. Cam Akers was fed like a workhorse when he returned, but was so inefficient. Henderson seemed to do just fine when he was the team RB1. What did your model say about each running back coming out of college, and how was Henderson's year two score? Henderson goes so late, I feel like he's the better value. Am I wrong? Now, I mentioned this on an episode of the show soon after the Super Bowl, but Cam Akers' numbers, they need more context. He not only had a better success rate in the playoffs than Sony Michel had, but the Rams faced really good rush defenses in the playoffs too. And the offensive line did not play well. Now, I'm not saying Akers has zero blame. I'm just saying that everyone is yelling about Akers not being good. But there's at least some reason for that. There's a lot of reasons for it. Not only that, but what would have happened if he just didn't come back last year? No one would have questioned him because that injury takes a long time to come back from. But he did come back. And he did handle a decent workload. I think we should just keep all of that in mind as well. And Henderson was decent last year. And he was a decent prospect too. He had an 86th percentile rating in my model, and his year two score was basically in the 86th percentile as well. Cam Akers was a 91st percentile back who had a 91st percentile year two score. So the model liked Akers more than Henderson, which isn't that surprising because he was more of a workhorse in college and he had better draft capital. I won't stop you from believing Henderson is the better value between the two this year. He's a late round back, so it's hard for me to fault someone with that take. I do expect Akers, though, to lead that backfield in touches as long as he's healthy. The biggest question mark for Akers is whether or not he's going to be used more as a receiver. The last question this week is from @FantasyAddict17. Hey JJ, in what cases should opportunity in a good offense outweigh player skill? Every advanced metric I've seen shows that Gabriel Davis might not be as skilled as some people are touting him, but the main appeal for him is his perceived role in the offense. Reminds me a bit of Mike Davis last year, which completely busted. He wasn't anything special at the position, but there wasn't another obvious option, which is why people were so high on him. Gabriel Davis might bust, but I don't think this is anything at all like Mike Davis. Mike Davis played 5 seasons in the NFL for 4 different teams before the injury to Christian McCaffrey that allowed him to have a good season in 2020. In 2021 with Atlanta, he was a journeyman back who had 1 productive year and he was 27 years old. Mike Davis was someone who wasn't anything special at the position, objectively. Gabriel Davis may not be special. We just don't know that yet for sure. But there are more reasons to believe that he has a chance than there were for Mike Davis last year. For example, and this is actually in the late round draft guide, but in Gabriel Davis's second season in the NFL last year, he played 70% or more of Buffalo's snaps in 6 games. That includes the playoffs. He averaged a 20% target share per game in those contests. He scored 8 times, scoring in 4 of those 6 games. He also finished the entire year ranked in the 85th percentile in yards per route run. He had a better yards per route run rate than some really, really good wide receivers last year. Davis has 13 regular season touchdowns across his 2 years in the league. Since 2010, 21 wide receivers have hit that mark while playing at least 8 games in their 3rd season. They average 14.7 PPR points per game during their 3rd season in the NFL. Only 5 of the 21 fell below 12 PPR points per game. At where Davis gets drafted, that's essentially expectation, that 12 mark. In a lot of cases, depending on the source, that's actually higher than expectation. He also wasn't a bad prospect. He's a smaller school guy, yeah, but he was an early declare. He had pretty good college production too. I think Davis is a pretty obvious candidate to break out this year with the movement in Buffalo and the offense that he's in. He's going to see opportunity. And if he's pretty good, which some things do indicate that he is, then he'll see a decent target share. A 20% target share can go a really long way in that offense. I recognize the downside, but I do think that people overstate fifth and sixth round picks pretty often in season-long drafts. Davis could bust, and you could still be absolutely fine if you get him as like your wide receiver 3 or 4. To me, given where some people have ranked him, he's a good get. It is a little bit different in best ball right now because he is being pushed up draft boards to complete the Josh Allen stack. But even there, I think he's fine. You can judge for yourself where I have him in my rankings that are now updated on the late round fantasy football Patreon. And my rankings are also in the draft guide. But I would definitely not say that Gabriel Davis has all advanced metrics working against him, or that he's Mike Davis. I think you can argue pretty easily that he's moving more similarly to Chris Godwin than Mike Davis. But that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all of you for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Fantasy Football Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Remember to check out the draft guide over on lateround.com. Otherwise, enjoy your holiday weekend. Happy 4th of July. I'll talk to you guys next week.